Hey everybody, how's it going? Connor Gilson here, president of CG Consulting. A little bit of a heads up. I just started recording this podcast. I actually did like 4 minutes of this before and I started losing my voice. So hopefully it's not going to be something of a problem. But apologize in advance if that is the case. So before we get started, I do want to apologize because I haven't recorded one of these in a while. And that's just because I've been literally waking up and literally working till when I go to bed at 4 in the morning, and just completely through. So I haven't had time to sit down and type up a podcast or type up my notes and then record it. Plus, I was also trying to decide what I was gonna talk about. We had the first series, which was about our minds and how important it is that we, control the operating system basically of our mindset. And then we talked about in the second series how to get clients, the way we talk, the way we utilize email signatures, websites, things like that. So when I was thinking about what I was going to do next, I was kind of trying to decide. There was a few ideas in my head, but none of them really jumped out at me. And it took a while. But I was in a conversation with somebody, and one of the things that I always talk and always teach my clients is how important time is. We take it for granted, I feel, and I'm not the first human to ever say that. Hell, there's been, thousands, if not millions of people that have said that. But I remember reading in a book that compared to the earth that we live on, or the planet that we live on, that's been here for so long, if you compare the lifespan of the earth and you set that as a day marker. So like let's say that the earth is 1 day old from the beginning of its existence till now. And then you think about how long we are 70, 80, if we're lucky, 90 or 100 years of being alive. How short that is compared to the earth. And if you put that in perspective, if you take the time period of how long the Earth has been here, and then you take our lifespan, our personal lifespan, we live but only a second, or half a second, rather. If you do the math correctly, it's half a second. And that's something that when I read that, it kind of changed my mentality. I've always viewed time as super important. We've all heard the cliches that time is the most important currency, that you can always make more money, you can't make more time. And with the people that I have around me, they know, or a lot of them know very well, how important my time is to me. If you neglect my time when I give it to you, or you don't credit as highly or close to as highly as I value it, I eventually will stop giving you that time. I will. But my time when I invest in people, that is because I see something special in them. I see something unique. I do that with myself. I do that with certain business ventures. I do that with ideas. I do that with me time, or like taking a breather. I do it with everything. I do it with that view that our life is only half a second compared to the thing that we live on. And it's funny because we don't really appreciate time as kids, right? Kids are, full of innocence, they're full of beauty, and just kind of more of a pure form. I talked about in a previous podcast about how they laugh like 400, and I forgot the number, I think it was like 438 or something, or no, 458, 458 times, whereas a day where a human laughs about, I think it was like 15 or something. It was crazy. So they have a lot of joy. They have a lot of, a lot. But one thing that kids do is we don't, all of us are guilty of this. We don't appreciate time as kids, right? Time seems unlimited. A lot of kids grow up and feel immortal because of how slow time is going. And that's something that I actually kind of just thought about as I said that because I had it written down here that time, seems unlimited. But thinking about it as a kid, I thought I was immortal. I thought I could not be killed. I could not die. I had something that changed that viewpoint, as a child, but when we're kids, we don't, it feels like everything takes so long, right? Like we wanna, hit a certain birthday. We wanna be 13 so we can watch, PG-13 movies. We wanna be 16 or 15 so we can get our permit or license. We wanna be 18 so we can be technically an adult. And then if you're like me, you wanna move out. It wasn't really until 22, I think. Like I oddly had a midlife crisis when I was 18, where I was just like, "Oh my goodness, my life is passing so fast. I have no idea what I'm doing." But 22 is where it really hit me because 21, you're legally able to drink, at least where I'm from. 21, you're legal to drink, and you, it's such an exciting year. But 22 comes, and boy, is it a letdown, huh? But as kids, we're impatient to grow up, to become adults, to enter the real world. We see all the freedom that our parents have, all the adults have, and we see all the things that we'll be able to do. If I want to buy junk food and eat that, I can. If I want to eat ice cream, I can. I don't have to answer to anybody. I'm in charge of my life, things like that. But when we finally arrive in adulthood, we discover that we'll end up spending the vast majority of our freedom at work, paying bills, and basically surviving. And in many cases, often in jobs that we don't like or even care about, and sometimes hate. So we fall into this romanticizing of this idea of being an adult, and then reality kind of cracks it open and shows that it's not really the way it is. Life is not how we imagined it, and then disillusionment fault sets in. We spend our half second of our life, our beautiful, precious life, and the chances of us being human is ridiculous. I think it's like 300 like trillion to one or something. I know we could be, a shoe, a pillowcase, a animal, a tree, but we're human. And if you're really lucky, you live in the United States or you live in another country that's free and has opportunity and that you can jump on it. But a lot of us spend our half a second doing everything except what we really want. We dream of the future of some distant, faraway day when life will be different, when it'll be better, when we can finally do the things that we want. But as we grow older, time kind of starts moving faster and faster. It moves so slow when we were young, but it moves faster and faster the older we get. And that long-awaited day that we always hope for never really seems to come. And that's kind of the sad part about it. And it's funny because, like I said, if you're lucky enough to live in the United States, if you're lucky enough to live in, another country that has freedom, whether it's Canada, Australia, I'm trying to think of other ones, Ireland, Europe, any of those, you really have this amazing shot, especially if you live in the United States. And I don't want to say like hoorah, our country is the best. I don't want to get into that type of biased thinking. It is good in a lot of ways, and we do have a lot of exceptional opportunities that we can jump at. But do we? Because the tragedy of life isn't that we only get half a second. The tragedy is that we waste it. We waste it on, worrying about things and keeping jobs that, make us feel stable and secure. We waste it by having friendships and relationships that are toxic and damaging to us just because it's comfortable, and that we want to be cared for and loved. We waste it by trying to fit in with everybody and just go with the flow and be part of the herd, so to speak. And that's really sad. Because it's interesting, because I like to ask people this question. I ask them, what would you do if you only had 1 year to live? Say I was a doctor and I gave you the diagnosis that you're terminally ill and that you only had 1 year left to live. And it's funny because almost every single answer, and I'm not even stretching this, almost every single, if not every single answer, starts with they would quit work, spend time with their family, see the world, do everything that they basically always dreamed of doing before it's too late. And that like hit me. It hits me hard every time I hear it because like usually I get curious and I'll ask a question and I'll ask people a question and then after I hear the same, repeated outcome, I get bored. I'm like, oh, this is what everybody says. I've done like studies where people get to ask me questions, and if like a certain pattern develops, like, hey, why are you doing it this way? Is usually a common one. The are you a dog or cat person? Like I've heard that one before. But when those responses come out and are constantly the same, I normally get bored. But I don't get bored of hearing what I just said. Quitting jobs, spending time with their family, seeing the world, traveling, doing one thing that they're scared of, like jumping out of a plane, bungee jumping when they're scared of heights. Like it's something different. It's like you see, and this is why I never get bored of it. You see in their eyes this beauty that unlocks. Like the inner kid like comes back to the front, and they see life differently for that second. They just love what they're seeing. But the sad part is all too quickly, the child disappears back in. And it's funny because I finally thought, like, God, can we only live when we think we're dying or when we're dying? And my impression of what most people think about in the world is that we spend life doing what we have to rather than what we want to. And maybe that's why, there's so much unhappiness in the world. Maybe that's why, Americans spend, what, $57 billion on lottery tickets each year? I don't think it's to win money and wealth. I think it's to win that freedom and finally do the things they want. But that's the tragedy. We work and we work because we have to. And we do things because we have to rather than what we want to. And I feel like if the younger version came to us and saw what we have become, I think it would hurt him or her. I think it would cause damage. So that's just something I always ask myself. If the younger, starry-eyed version of me, if little Connor came to me and asked, what do I do now? Would he be proud? Would he be happy? Would he be excited and look forward to it? Could I be honest with him? Could I be honest and look him in the eyes and say, there's been some times that it's been rough? But I've come back and I do what I want to do, and I live life in a way that is so intense and beautiful because I understand that all the things that you hoped for and wished for. Are going to come true. And maybe some goals changed. Maybe some goals, didn't turn out to be what I wanted in a certain time. But did the principles stay there? Did the little version of me, if he asked me, would he be proud to hear what 26-year-old version of me is doing? And I think that's something we should always ask ourselves, not just once, but always. Have we settled down? Have we started taking crap at work when we don't want to? Have we started to letting people walk on us? Have we started letting people define our value? I always picture that little guy watching, eyes wide and open, learning, taking in information like kids do. Like, what do I become? And really, if you can, the deeper you can get into that mindset, the deeper you can make that a reality and feel what it would be like. I think that's the better. It's going to be, that's what's going to help you. So some things that I like to do to keep my head in that, I actually have to do one soon because a lot of the things I've put on my previous lists, I've done. But do you have a bucket list? I know it sounds weird, right? Like we think about bus, but bucket lists, and we think about once again people dying, once again, people viewing that day. And I don't want you to, go to sleep tonight and think, oh, Connor taught me to think about when I die and how I need to get all this stuff done. I don't remember. I don't like, controlling. I like, well, I mean, certain things I like to control, but, as far as like people's minds, I don't want to control your mind as you build your business, as you venture out. I don't want to do that. I want you to see the world vividly and with beauty and embrace it. So focusing on goals and things like that or a bucket list, I don't want you to focus on it with the day that you're going to die. Always have that thought there that you are going to eventually die, but focus on all the good stuff in between. Remember, it's not the destination, it's the journey. And death teaches us that better than anything else. But do you have a bucket list? No, maybe not. Then make one. Like, do it now, honestly, while you still can. While there's still life and strength in your veins, while there's still a beat in your chest, while there's still, the glint in your eye, that smile that you can have, do that now. Because one of the most painful things I've ever witnessed in another human is regret. Regret, if you want to get some motivation, go to a like an old person home, convalescent home, and look, because there's nothing more soul crushing than somebody that's dying that has regret. And that's what I focus on. I focus on, and I've mentioned this before, that we sometimes jump too far. We go into autopilot and we jump into the past and we jump into the future and we don't stay in the now. I use the past and the future. I use that little kid that wants to see me succeed, the littler version of me. But I also see the older version of me letting go and dying slowly. Does he have regrets? Does he wish, oh, you should have worked more? Oh, you should have worked less. Oh, you should have cared more about the people around you. Oh, you shouldn't have let the people around you, dictate your life. Oh, you should have, stood up more. And I keep those two points. It's like a tightrope in between two very stuck, like buildings almost. And that's what it is. Because you can focus on what's behind you, and you can focus on what's in front of you while you're on a tightrope. But what you need to focus on mainly is your foot placement as you walk across the tightrope. You have to be so in the moment and so now. You do have to have a sounding point that, hey, this is how much ground I've covered, and this is where I'm getting to. And that keeps it there. But you're right there in that middle spot. And some of us are further along the tightrope than others. Some of us are behind. Some of us are, I don't think I have anybody listening that's 16 or 17 or 15, but eventually there will be. And I don't know if I have anybody that's listening at like 70 or 80. But no matter how far we are along that tightrope, we need to keep focus of that time. Because that's what is important. And it's funny because you think of the guy that founded, and like, I ponder to a lot of, or pander to a lot of, young ones. I want to help young ones. I feel like our education system is broken and it doesn't teach them about what they need to learn in order to make money. It teaches them on how to be a cog in the system to make, minimal while they make someone else money. So I usually pander to that age demographic. Because I was lucky enough to use my own mind and come out of that thinking pattern at a very, very, very young age. And I hope to help other young ones do that as well. But let's talk about older people. Because our half a second, no matter when we snap into it and realize that that's what we have, that's important. Right? We think about the guy that founded Kentucky Fried Chicken. He had a pretty colorful life. He did farming, he did piloting steamboats, sold insurance. And when he founded Kentucky Fried Chicken at the age of 65, and basically making his recipe immortal, and nonetheless, the big thing, becoming a multimillionaire in the process, that's a big thing. One other one I really, really like is, if you haven't watched it yet, the movie Founder, about Ray Kroc beginning his transformation of McDonald's into a global company. And he was in his 50s, if I recall correctly. So. And that was interesting because that wasn't his company. He was at a pretty sore point selling, forget what type of machine it was. Oh, I do not remember. Was it, oh, it was milkshake machines or blenders or whatever. And he was like, he was pretty depressed at this point. He stopped at a McDonald's, one of the first ones, and ate there and was impressed by how fast it was and how good the food was. And he ended up getting himself into that company. And while I don't really like his ethics towards the end, part of me kind of does, because he worked really hard at it and they weren't really working as hard. But he was able to, it wasn't even his company. He came into it and then was able to turn it into a huge, huge company, something that I can mention and everybody knows. Honestly, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't know what McDonald's is, send me an email at info@connorgilson.com. Yeah, I know. And all you guys are laughing and laughing and laughing. The reason I said that is there's the point, right? He was in his 50s and he created something from somebody else creating something, noticing that it was great and making it better. In his 50s, made a company that just made you laugh when I said, if you didn't know about it, send me an email. That's impressive, right? How important our lives, how much impact. Like, think of how much impact McDonald's has made to billions of people. Something to think about, huh? And it's interesting because the over the 55-year category, they're responsible for starting 28% of all new businesses. Wow, I'm really tired. Businesses in the United States every single year. So over 55, starting 28%. Wow, I'm tired. I'm messing up all these words. It is 4:30 though. Starting 28% of all new businesses in the United States every single year. 28%. So no matter where you are on that tightrope, no matter where you are, you still can snap out of whatever funk or drift you're in and grind and hustle. And I don't mean, I mean, maybe you're not Just focusing on business. Maybe you want to get closer to your family. Maybe you want to get a little bit healthier. Maybe you want to, I don't know, go to the gym. Maybe you want to eat better food. And maybe you want to be happier. Doesn't always have to be money. And that's one of the things that, mindset encompasses is not just money and success in business, but your overall happiness. So going into success, whether it's money or relationships or happiness or anything like that, you have a few doors of success, if you will. The first one is clarity. To achieve success, you must know what success looks like. You must define it to a T. Because if you don't have clarity with and you don't know what you want, and I'm going to slow this down for you. If you don't have clarity and you don't know what you want, your life will be an accident. However pleasant or unpleasant it is, it's going to be an accident. If we don't have clarity, if we don't have goals, if we don't have a plan, if we don't have morals, if we do not stand for anything, one of my favorite quotes in a movie, Sucker Punch, if you do not stand, if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. One of the weirdest, strangest movies I've ever watched, but one of the best quotes that has stayed with me for years. And I think that's powerful, but I also think it's way more powerful to say that if you don't have clarity and you don't know what you want, your life will be an accident. And it might not fire you up like it fires me up. It might not. But let me put a little perspective into it. In previous podcasts, I talked about how powerful the human mind is, how there's nothing on this planet more powerful as far as a tool, as far as a piece of machinery. There's nothing as powerful. And I don't mean like crushing, like powerful. I mean like wonderfully, beautifully powerful. There's nothing that comes near it. And there's nothing that comes near to what we are. And our life can be this amazing piece of art that we paint with bits of sadness and despair and hardship, but also beautiful colors and happiness and joy. But are we in control of that? Or are we on like a tailspin? Is our life just an accident? Is it just like, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'll just let the winds of change take me wherever they want? Is that what we are? Hey, this is what this person's doing. Hey, this is normal in our culture. Hey, this moral practice is normal. This business practice is normal. This is what everybody does. I don't really know what I'm doing here. I'm just kind of, I feel emotionally weak, so I'm going to give in to it. That's all accident stuff. That's one of the hardest things when I really care about a client or a pro bono or a coaching student. That's what drives me up the wall is when I see somebody that has such beauty and amazing, amazing potential. Because I teach a lot of people. That's why it's easy for me to do this podcast. That's why it's easy for me to do webinars. I've been teaching people since I was 7. Getting up on stages and teaching people. It's easy for me. But it's easy for me to have a client or a customer that I want to help and like, but it's not always easy for me to have a customer or a customer or a coaching student or a pro bono or a friend that I want to help and really feel something and really feel attached to them and really, 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 really care. Almost to some point where I care more about their health and their benefit than my own. But the hardest part of that is when they throw it away, when they make a decision, and there's some that I let go, there's some I'm like, okay, you're weak at this point, let's try to, go fix this and go around it. But that is the most depressing and devastating and crushing thing for me when I really care about somebody and I'm putting all this time into helping them, and they don't meet up to what I know they can do. It's the hardest thing. But to unlock pretty much the door of clarity, you must define what success means for you, what you want in life, and you must define it as a goal. People fail in life not because they aim high or low, but because they don't aim at all. There's too many people in this country, in this continent, in this world that do not set goals. Studies at Virginia Tech University found that people with goals earn 9 times as much over their lifetime as people without goals. 9 times as much. So do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Whip out your calculator, which is on your phone. You can, it's really cool technology. You can open the calculator while you listen to this if you're listening to it on your phone. It's super sweet. Try that out. Well, I mean, some older phones don't do that, but most of them do now. But go onto your calculator, punch in your current income a year, and then multiply it by 9. That's just a year. If we could prophesy how much we're going to make in a lifetime and then times that by 9 by if to see what we would make with goals, it would be even easier. It would be even better. I wish I could tell you to do that, but we don't know what jobs we're going to have, what job changes we're going to have, things like that. But times it by 9, what you make a year. That is what goals will do. I mean, you have to work on the goals. You can't just like pop it up into the universe and be like, take the wheel here. I'm just gonna believe. You have to work. Because the reality is goals cut through the noise, right? They cut through all the garbage that goes on. They dim the background. They pull our focus onto what matters, what has meaning. And that's the thing. Everything else just kind of grows a little less important, a little less clear. When we have goals, certain things that people do don't push us off them. It doesn't affect our happiness that much. And that is called, there's a terminology for it, reticular activation. It's basically a fancy name for the mind's ability to filter out irrelevant information and concentrate on essentials. If you read the book, oh, I can't think of it. Think it's Thinking Fast and Slow, but maybe I'm thinking of a different book. It's a hard read. I think it's Thinking Fast and Slow, but I remember it was ridiculous to read. Like it was like, even for me who takes in a lot of information, I'm just like, oh my God, this book is a lot. But it went into how our brain is locked into two different phases. You have the first layer and then the second layer. And one of them is in charge of like all the quick like deciphering things. But it can get bogged down. It can get super like burdened and like weighed down by things that are super, super complex, which it hands over to the other side of the mind, which then tackles the more complex things. But that reticular activation is part of that part of the brain that just kind of thinks of things very fast. It's the one that takes in information and filters it very quickly. When we focus and we have goals and all the stuff around us doesn't bother us as much because it's not important, we keep moving forward. It ends up helping us because it ends up helping our overall happiness. It helps like who we are as a person. It helps them a lot. And for goals to be effective, your mind has to be able to focus on them. They must. be precise. And a lot of you are saying, but I know what I want. I know precisely what I want. I want to be rich. I want to be happy. I want to be successful. I want to, have a bigger house. I want to, enjoy life. But honestly, what does rich, happy, and successful really mean? No one knows for sure. It's a definition that's different for everybody else. They're just kind of concepts. They're like foghorns, right? Foghorns aren't. If you ever like go into like a harbor and you hear a foghorn, it's loud, it's overwhelming. Some of them are downright terrifying, especially when you're not expecting it. But there is no precision. It's just a noise that rips across everything and just kind of fills everything. But that's what those words really are. Richness, being rich, happy, being successful, they're just fuzzy, like foghorns. They're the exact, absolute exact opposite of precise. I think of the machines that military and police use to stop riots. It is a machine that puts off noise in a directed funnel that literally will stop a human dead in his tracks. In many cases, drop them to their knees. Like their organs, they feel it. They feel in every ounce of them, and they do not proceed forward. I've seen people get tased and run through it like no problem. I've seen people be maced and run through it with no problem. I've seen people get hit by a nightstick or a bat and keep going. This thing stopped them dead. I have never seen a human go through these things. It just stops them. That's the definition of precise. Still a very loud noise, so loud that we really don't really hear it. We feel it reverb through our bodies, but that is what precision is. It's not a foghorn. Foghorn's loud, makes noise, and it fills an area like crazy. That's its point. But are we more precise and more like those machines that can stop a human dead in his tracks? So, rich, happiness, and successful, they're very hard to grasp unless you express them in numbers, dates, percentages, units, dollars, whatever, putting a number on them. So instead of, and I'm going to list off a few ones, if you want more time with your family, then set a goal of spending 2 hours of uninterrupted, that means putting your darn phone down. I know it's super hard this day and age, but spending 2 hours of quality time with them each day or evening or night or halfway through the day in the afternoon. I don't know, whatever works for you. Instead of wanting to become more healthy, set a goal of lowering your resting heart rate by 15% or reducing your waistline by 3 or 4 inches. Decrease how much time it takes you to walk by 1 minute to do your run or jog or walk. How much weight you want to lift at a certain point, how much weight you want to lose by a certain number at a certain date. Instead of wanting to create better art, do a survey on like how people rate your work and set a goal of increasing your score by 10 to 20% during the next year. Instead of wanting becoming more profitable, set a goal of increasing your profit margin by 25% over the next year. Set what your return of investment on marketing is a year. Maybe I want to make, this dollar amount return of investment on marketing that I'm spending this much on by this date. Just whatever it is, turn your goals into numbers. It's funny because if you think about Jim Carrey, right? Everybody knows about Jim Carrey. I mean, it's almost like the McDonald's thing. He was a unknown actor struggling to survive. I think at one point he was homeless, living in the back of a camper van at his sister's house. What I do remember is that he wrote a check for himself for $10 million for, and he put in parentheses, acting services rendered, with a future date of November 28th, 1995. For years, he carried that check around with him. He put it in his wallet, keeping his goal firmly in sight. And it's interesting, I like how he kept it in his wallet, and I don't know if he did this on purpose. It's just where my mind went, because I like to figure out how people's minds work. But he kept the check in his wallet. So every time he spent money, he was always thinking about the day when he was going to have more. I like that thought pattern. And maybe he didn't think that way. Maybe it was just easier to put it in his wallet because his wallet's always with him. Okay? Maybe if there's this day and age, he would have it in his phone case. I don't know. But I do like the principle of every time spending money, he saw that check there. Every time he paid a bill, every time he spent money on food, every time he was worried about how he couldn't pay for something, it was right there. And it's funny because in 1994, to star in Dumb and Dumber, he was paid $10 million. And it's funny because another one, Arnold Schwarzenegger, would sit on at his desk on January 1st every year and write his goals for the year ahead on index cards. He would write things like starting a mail order business, winning the Mr. Olympia, buying a new car, and then on December 21st of that year, he would be back at the same exact desk, putting the index cards away one by one with the word done on top. Year after year, without fail, he precisely defined his goals, and that is why he was able to achieve them. And we think about Arnold Schwarzenegger, like how much he's accomplished, winning Mr. Olympia, obviously buying a new car, creating businesses, becoming the governor of California. Like, this guy knew how to set goals. The easier your goals are to see, the more attainable they will seem. Because if you're visualizing something and you're visualizing you having it, and once again, I like to stress this, I do not mean making a goal and thinking that the law of attraction or the universe is going to give it to you without any work. But in order to get work to work out for you, you have to have focus. You have to have an endpoint. You have to have a goal. In fact, most of my goals that I have, I'll set and then reverse engineer them. I'll literally go through them backwards of what I need to do in order to get to that point. But the easier for you to see those goals, if you have to read them every night before you go to bed and every morning you wake up, if you want to visualize that new car in your driveway. It's funny because this time last year, or actually a year, 2 year, year and a half ago, I set a goal by September that I'd have a new car. At the time, I wanted a WRX. It was my first car loan, though, and the bank didn't really want to go for that. But I did get a new car. It wasn't exactly the one I wanted. I kind of hit a little lower than the bar I set. But by September, I had a new car. And it's funny because at one point I forgot to keep reading that note. And then it was recently, it popped up on Facebook because I had posted it on Facebook when I set the goals. And it popped up on Facebook and I was like, oh crap, I forgot this. And I had a car by this time. Another goal was to be making, I think it was $5,000 on one income stream. And I had smashed that. And I'm not like, because I have investments, so I'm not counting those and how big they're growing, because I have stocks that are, way like earning $5,000 in like 2 months. I think I have one that earns, depending on the day, five in one day. But those are investments I keep locked away and I don't touch. But I had this goal for my kind of side hustle type thing, and I got there and I blew it away. And research shows that people who visualize goals are more successful in achieving them because you have a plan, you have a map, you have a goal and you have a way to get there. And it's funny because if you think about humans, we're very proactive in designing and configuring the things that we want to buy. What's their exact size? What's the shape? What's the color we want? What's the shading? What's the texture, the feel? But when it comes to life, we're far less proactive. It's funny, right? Because when we buy a car or when we want to buy a car, we know what brand it is, what make it is. Well, I mean, a lot of us, if we're interested in cars, or maybe it's something, maybe it's a purse for you, maybe it's a new watch, a new suit. Oh my God, I'm so tired. It's 5 o'clock almost, though. We pick the color and everything, but when it comes to our life, we don't. We don't. We're like, oh, we want to be rich, or we want to make more money. Well, get more precise. Come on, be like the person that wants their car, or wants that dream car. What color is the car? What make? What model? What trim level is it? What are the interior colors in it? Like everything. What think about our houses, how much attention and detail we put into things like that. Like consider that out of 100 people in the United States, on average, 80 don't make goals. They don't have any goals. So out of 100, 80 people don't have any goals. 16 have goals but don't write them down. 3. Yeah, 3. Out of every 100, 3 people have goals, write them down, but don't review them. And then only one person in 100 has goals, writes them down, and reviews them. If you write on a piece of paper and you throw the piece of paper somewhere, and like I said, I'm guilty of this, I ended up doing it. I had it pretty much instilled in my mind, but I guess not good enough because I forgot about the whole car part. But if you just shove it in a corner somewhere, it's not going to help you. You got to go over it. And it's funny because you think with 50 million Americans living in poverty, why is only 1% of the population setting goals? It's interesting, right? Because we talk about how important the 1% is and what do the 1% do that nobody else does? And there's a few things, but one of them is they write down goals and they review them. And that's what I don't get. Why are the most needy people not doing the simplest, most time-tested, proven, and cost-effective, let alone free, thing to help themselves? When I was homeless, when I went through my homeless period, I had goals. I read books to attain those goals, and it kept me focused. A lot of people that become homeless pick up drug habits, pick up addiction habits. I didn't because I had goals and I focused on them and I met them. And that's what got me out of being homeless. Taking an index card and writing goal number one, $2,000 financial, let's say, buffer by the end of 2018 would increase the probability of that happening by orders of massive magnitude. If you don't believe me, try it. Write down a goal, review it every day before you go to bed, or after you wake up, before you wake up. Yeah, I would like to see that happen. After you wake up, and then do that for a year. Believe, vision that goal, and work your butt off at achieving it. And then at the end of the year, tell me whether you achieved it or not. And it's funny because I'm going to call your bluff here. I'm going to call your bluff because a lot of you people, and I got to end this podcast soon. A lot of you people are going to hear that, think about it, and honestly, I'm probably not going to get any at all. Maybe one or two emails from people that'll actually do that at the end of the year. So let me make it easier for you to prove me wrong. Right now, go into the calendar on your phone and set a reminder that I want to see your goals. So write down your goals, and I want you to take a picture right now and save it in your camera roll on your phone, And then at the end of the year, I want you to write done by the ones that you accomplished, okay? And if you came really close to one, I want you to write partial next to it. So put that in your calendar that at the end of the year, you'll send me the picture of the list before, or actually you can just take one picture at the end of the year, but we tend to lose lists, but one before and then one at the end, and then send it to me to my email, info@connorgilson.com, and then send that to me, and I want to see how many goals you achieved. So I'm calling your bluff. Because a lot of you people are going to say, oh, well, that doesn't work or whatever. I want you to do it, and then I want you to send me an email. No excuses. Don't want to hear it. If it's popping up in your head how you don't want to do it or you're nervous or scared, then just stop listening. Go to bed. Go turn on House of Cards. Go play Madden, whatever. Let's see how much time I have left. 50 minutes. I got to run through these last few points. Research on goal setting demonstrated that people who share their goals with others are more likely to succeed over people who just write goals, or worse, just think about them. So there's a three-step thing. One, and I did this. One, I wrote down my goals, or I thought of my goals. Okay, I thought of my goals, then I wrote them down, put them in my own handwriting, very powerful for the human psyche. And number two, I sent them to my friends, because sending them to your friends kind of holds you accountable. Because those days when you're lazy, you're gonna be like, oh, I did say I was gonna do this. My friends are gonna think I'm lazy or make fun of me or whatever because I didn't do it. So it makes you hold yourself more accountable. And it's funny because in one of my favorite books, The Psychology of Persuasion, he cites that there's a bunch of examples of this work, but one of them involves weight loss clinics, which require their clients to write down an immediate weight loss goal and show it to as many friends, relatives, and neighbors as possible. Clinic operators report that frequently this simple technique works where all other techniques have failed. Pretty impressive, huh? So write down your goals, show them to as many people as possible. You have my email if you want to shoot it over to me, I will gladly look at them. Show me what your goals are. Anyhow, guys, it is about almost 5 o'clock. It's 52 minutes for this podcast, a good place to cut it. Hopefully, I will see you guys tomorrow. I'm going to possibly take the day off, the whole day off, just to kind of recharge the old batteries, because I have been working like a nutcase. And so, my 16-day solid work pulse, if you will, comes to completion. So sometimes 19-hour days for 16 days straight. So remember to grind, remember to work, set those goals, attain them, and send me some emails. I like emails. All right. Anyhow, guys, I wish you the best. Once again, my name is Connor Gilson. I am the president of CG Consulting, and I'll be seeing you guys later.